Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's that football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. I will be very careful with my slinging stuff. Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
Little Sam Monson. We're live on YouTube with a very, very special show here, Sam. Dane Brugler from The Athletic, standing by, waiting for us to bring him in.
Yep.
So we're going to get into it in just a second. The PFF NFL podcast, though, it's all sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow. Well, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. And you can also get started with The Beast. That's right, Dane's draft guide, which is over at The Athletic. Let's get Dane right in here. We'll talk about it. I want to know how he gets. How many pages was this thing? It's not even that many pages.
Well,
there's a lot of words.
308
words. 308 pages, but it's like there's a lot of info crammed in there. Dane, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Hey, it's my pleasure for being able to join you guys. It's it's a labor of love. You know, it's a lot of work. It's a year in the making, really. So to be able to share it finally with everybody was a really rewarding feeling.
It's got to be awesome. Can you describe some of your process? Because we're talking about paragraphs on hundreds and hundreds of players, thousands of players essentially ranked. Where do you start? You know, when you're starting next year's, you know, how do you get all this information?
Well, it's kind of like a living document, right? So, you know, through the course of this year, I always pick up stuff for next year. You know, it's a player talking about a guy that's going to be in next year's draft, or a scout saying, hey, we're talking about Ohio State and we're talking about a certain position. He's like, oh, yeah, by the way, watch for number 12 next year. He's going to be a guy. And, you know, it's about all these notes ready for next year. But really, it starts in earnest in June. I try to take May to kind of, you know, reintroduce myself to my family.
That's good.
I help coach my daughter's softball team, my son's baseball team, you know, do some stuff around the house, that kind of thing. But then in June, really dive into it. And that's where the base is. You know, it's doing all the tape for the seniors and some of the notable underclassmen, getting the base down. So we have just a good understanding going into the season of, okay, based on summer scouting, here's our expectations for the upcoming class. And then obviously throughout the year, you have, you know, things change based off updated tape, updated evidence. And then you go into, you know, once January hits, then you're in the thick of it with all-star season and then combine and pro days again. So it really is a year-round thing where it's just constant information control, you know, because you have so much stuff coming at you. And so just understanding what's relevant, what's not. I think the biggest thing for me too is my biggest challenge is understanding when I've seen enough of a player, because there's always one more tape you go watch, right? You know, there's always it's one more tape, or let's see time management, so you're watching the right tapes, how many you need to get a really good sense of who that player is. So I, over the years, I've learned, hopefully, you know, try to get better with that process of making sure I'm watching the right thing. So I'm being efficient with my time. And then just understanding, okay, yeah, I think I've seen enough. I think this is who this player is. For some players, it's, you know, five tapes. For quarterbacks, you know, you want at least 8, 9, 10. And sometimes that's not even enough to really give you a great sense. So it really is a moving target.
How do you decide, you know, which tapes you're going to watch for guys, and specifically kind of how good a guy was likely in a specific tape? You know, you want to make sure you don't miss like a glaringly bad game somewhere along the way, or a glaringly good one that might not have been obvious just from box score stats or whatever. What's your process for kind of zeroing in on which tapes you want to watch?
Well, I mean, first off, I think it's important to watch throughout the year, making sure you're not watching all September or all November, you know, just in case there's an injury in there. You know, a guy was dealing with a hamstring first half of the year, second half, he was fully healthy, that kind of thing. So making sure it's spread out a little bit. But obviously, you know, you can go based off of top competition for some guys. For some teams, it's a little bit easier. If you're dealing with like an SEC prospect, then it gets a little tougher about which games exactly you're going to watch. But, you know, that's where, you know, during the season, you know, on Saturdays, I'm watching these games on TV. And so I'm making notes based off of that and saying, okay, hey, make sure you watch, go back and watch this the third quarter, 10 minutes left in the game. Make sure you're watching, you know, check this play, or, you know, just things like that to make sure, based off of just TV watching, I'm going back to those tapes. So that helps a lot as well. And there will be times where I'll get to March and I feel like I know a player, and then, you know, I'm talking about a player with somebody I trust, and they're saying these things. And, you know, did you watch this tape? It's like, oh shoot, no, I watched, you know, seven of his tapes. I didn't watch this one, so I'm going to go back and watch that one, make sure I didn't miss something. So it's an inexact science, you know. It's not like there's a perfect process for it. Try to just pick and choose the best you can.
So when we're talking about which games to watch, you know, one of our biggest debates here has been C.J. Stroud specifically, and how do you weigh the Georgia game? How do you weigh C.J. Stroud against Georgia, which looked nothing like the rest of his season? So what's your perspective? Did C.J. Stroud answer all of his questions, or was it just this one game sample that happened to be against the best team and the last thing that we saw?
That's the debate, right? I mean, that's what every NFL team that's looking at C.J. Stroud as a realistic possibility for them, that's what they're asking. Because, I mean, the first, like, 27, 28 games, I think he played 28 games, the first 27 games of his career, you know, you saw one player, and then the last game where he had a month to prepare. You know, how much does that go into the whole equation? But all I know is the best defense he's probably ever faced. One of the biggest stages he's ever been on, and to go out there and do what he did, I mean, that has to count for a lot in terms of, because there's an old scouting adage, if you've seen a player do it once, you know he can do it. Then it's just up to my coaches to make sure that he does it consistently. So I think from that perspective, you're optimistic that, okay, we saw that he could negotiate the pocket, deal with pressure, really use his legs to be more than just a designed quarterback run guy. I mean, he can be a little creative, which, and that's the big question with Stroud, is can he be creative enough when things go off schedule to make things happen like he did against Georgia? And I think that the answers to those questions will be a little bit different for everybody. Not everybody will be fully bought in, but some will look at that Georgia tape and say, look, I saw him do it. I know he can do it. And so I'll bet on that every day. So, you know, I think that it's the answer is a little bit different for everybody. It does make it a little bit difficult. You wish you could have seen that, you know, where was this before? You know, where was this? And I think a big part of it too is, did he really even have to do that a lot? You know, that's one of the biggest questions I have with Stroud, is just the playing with two NFL tackles, left tackle, right tackle. He didn't have to move often, you know, where he was really flush from the pocket or feeling a lot of pressure. You know, there are times, you know, I think of the Iowa game and a few other games where, you know, Penn State, where, you know, I felt like he left some meat on the bone where he could have been a little more creative creating outside of structure. But, you know, he didn't have to do it very often on tape. And this goes back to with Stroud, it goes back to Pee Wee, goes back to high school. He's never been a guy that wants to be on the move and using his athleticism. It's not that he's not a good athlete. It's just that he wants to be a pocket passer. And I don't, you know, we can't fault him for that. But at the same time, it's more about just being, you know, using all your tools to your advantage, you know, just being smart about it. And so I think he's still in the process of learning, okay, when is, you know, that internal clock, when is, okay, I've worn out my welcome here in the pocket. Let's go create a little bit, see what's outside. And that's the big debate with Stroud is, can he be more consistent with that ability to create?
So your quarterback rankings generally, I think, are fairly well in line with the consensus. You see it as a kind of big four group, and all four of those guys are in your top 15 of the top 100 in the back of this guide. Bryce Young is your number one quarterback and your number one player overall. How high are you on Bryce Young? And, you know, how does the completely ridiculous size thing factor into your evaluation?
It's tough, right? We've never seen a quarterback this size in the modern era. So how should it factor into your evaluation? You know, I'm not so much worried about the size as I'm worried about durability and being able to hold up.
Right.
That slight build, just it, and especially for a guy like Bryce, because he welcomes the chaos. He wants the chaos.
Yep.
Because that means that he'd rather have a guy bearing down on him because it gives that route an extra half beat to get open. So he welcomes that chaos. And in the NFL, where everything's just a little bit faster, even compared to the SEC, everything's a little bit faster. So you're going to take some hits. Can his body hold up? And that's the question, is can he be durable enough to hold up for a 17-game schedule into the playoffs and be healthy, not miss games, and do this for, you know, the next 10 years. If you come to the conclusion that you're not confident he can do that, I understand. I understand completely where you're coming from. But at the end of the day, when you evaluate quarterbacks, you're making bets. So I'm going to bet on the guy that is special when it comes to his instincts, his vision, his processing, his accuracy, all the things that matter so much to position. I'm going to bet on those things and kind of cross my fingers that he's going to be able to stay healthy. And I hear, you know, crossing your fingers that he's going to stay healthy. It's not really a sound process, or, you know, but at the same time, when you evaluate quarterbacks, you're going to have to give on something, unless you're evaluating, you know, a no-brainer at number one, which I don't think this draft has one of those guys. You're going to have to give on something. And with Bryce, you're going to just hope that you're going to be able to keep him healthy enough that he's going to evolve as well in terms of taking care of his body a little bit more. So, you know, just understanding, okay, welcoming that chaos, but at the same time, not taking hits. So I'm going to bet on that. I'm going to bet on everything that, you know, intangible he brings to the position, and yeah, see what happens. So I think that's what the Panthers are going to come to the conclusion too, is, listen, this guy, yeah, he's an outlier. The moment we draft him, he's going to be the smallest quarterback in the league. But I think our offensive line is in a good spot, and we're going to bet on the guy that is special between the ears and just everything he brings intangible-wise.
How high do you have him ranked or graded compared with, you know, the last few kind of draft classes of quarterbacks? Obviously, last year was a rough year,
right, and
not a great comp, but, you know, the Trevor Lawrence year, that kind of thing. Where does Bryce Young stack up with those, with the fact that we don't really know what to do with the size thing, but on the field, this is what he looks like?
Yeah, and, you know, it's always tough to do this because I find it tough because I have to eliminate what the guy's done in the NFL, right? And so it just going based off of strictly how we thought of them as prospects, I'd probably still have a higher grade on Trevor Lawrence. Now, the interesting thing is if we start to talk about next year's quarterback class, when things get really interesting with Caleb Williams and Drake May, and I get it, you know, next year's quarterback class is always better, quote unquote. You know, it's a cliche we hear almost every year. It was true last year when we talked about this quarterback class, and I think it's true for next year's quarterback class with the guys we have coming up next year. So I think there's a good chance, as much as I love Bryce Young, I think, you know, Trevor Lawrence has a higher grade, and there's a good chance both those guys next year will have higher grades because in the size being the main factor there. Caleb Williams, he's – and the other thing with Bryce that worries me a little bit is that when he is in the pocket and things close up on him a little bit, he doesn't have that power arm where he's going to step into the throw and drill these darts down the field. He has a good enough arm. I'm not worried about the arm, but it's not a power arm, and that worries you a little bit. Caleb Williams, I don't have that worry at all. So, you know, I think there's a good chance both those guys next year have higher grades than on what I see Bryce Young this year.
Yeah, Caleb Williams does some ridiculous things with the ball. I mean, you're gonna hear Patrick Mahomes comps. You're gonna hear comps for every great quarterback for Caleb Williams next year. do you have like a hard grading number or specific system? Is there a way to go back and say this guy was a 7, this guy was a 7.2? Do you have that? Is that hidden somewhere? Because it's not necessarily displayed, but do you have that to reference? How does that process work for you?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I have my own internal that means probably absolutely nothing to anybody, but except for me. You
know, like my draft
language.
Model.
Yeah. Yeah. It's my own scouting language of weighted for this and that and how I view certain traits and things like that. And I think that I tweak it almost every year, so it does make it difficult because, you know, I think the biggest – so I've learned over the years the best trait for an evaluator is to be a self-evaluator and understand, okay, this is what I've gotten wrong, this is what I've gotten right, why, you know, and understanding. So I do tweak my process a little bit every year, and so I kind of screws up my, be able to compare it year to year. But, I do have my own kind of internal grading system that I use.
So one of the things we debate here all the time is how much – in quarterback evaluation specifically, I don't know where you stood on Josh Allen or Justin Herbert or Mahomes coming out. And again, it's more art than science, right? Everybody probably wrote, hey, Mahomes could be special, right? And we could all point back to like, hey, we said Mahomes could be special, right? But do you ever go back and say, these guys have hit more than they did previously, right? The great traits quarterbacks have hit far more in the last 5 or 6 years probably than they did the previous 10 to 15. Does that change your evaluations at all? Is that an evolving league, or is that just the numbers, right? We just started to hit on some more of the toolsy type of quarterbacks recently.
Yeah, and I think above all, quarterback is an intangible position, and it's just trying to understand what makes these guys tick, you know, because the tools, they matter. There's no question. But I think Jalen Hurts is a great example. Like, for a guy that – because I think Jalen Hurts coming into the league, I wouldn't call his skill set special necessarily, but you know, it was a really versatile, athletic, talented skill set, and it's a matter of, but not everyone, you know, with Jalen Hurts has Jalen Hurts' competitive toughness and mental toughness, so he could work through all the mistakes that he went through to fix certain things and get better. And you know, Josh Allen, same type of thing where, you know, he's learning on the fly and getting better, learning from those mistakes. You know, a lot of these quarterbacks, they don't learn from sitting and, you know, reading, digesting a playbook and watching film. They need to be on the field. And that's, you know, with Anthony Richardson, he's a guy that I need him on the field to learn, to get better. And so I that's the big question with Anthony Richardson is, if I'm a team considering drafting him, how long before I feel comfortable to get him on the field? If it's not until next year, that really worries me, because I think he's not going to get truly better until he gets on the field. You know, it's we hear all the time, like, oh, just let him sit for a year. I don't know that that really does all that much. I think, you know, especially a guy like Richardson and, you know, Josh Allen, same type of thing. Getting these guys on the field, letting them learn from their mistakes, understanding what NFL play speed looks like, feels like, and working through that's such a key part of developing. And so going to understanding what makes these guys tick, when can they get on the field, and having the mental toughness to work through those mistakes, to me, that's as big of a key factor here as anything. So having those tools is great, and it's a big part of the equation, but having the mental toughness to work through the mistakes and work through all the errors that are inevitable that come with playing the position at a high level against NFL defenses, that's a big part of this too. So, you know, I think with Hurts, it's a great example because he's a rock. He's a guy that has so much confidence and belief in himself that he can work through all that, and it's not going to deter him. He's going to keep chugging away, getting better and better. And just not every quarterback has that psyche, has that mentality. So trying to understand, getting to the head of all these guys, that's the toughest part of quarterback evaluation, for especially for us on the outside, but even for teams who have unlimited resources and, you know, all this access to these quarterbacks. So it really makes it interesting.
Yeah, I feel like there's a really interesting balancing act now between experience and getting these guys improving on-field reps. Like Trey Lance is a good example, and mm-hmm. there's a comp there with Anthony Richardson, like just incredibly inexperienced. And I agree with you. I think because probably a bunch of factors, but one of them being the practice time being different. Like, you know, Bill Parcells wasn't crazy by wanting mm-hmm. only guys that had like 40 plus college starts under their belt because of that experience, because of those right. those live reps, the real bullets flying, that kind of thing. And sure, it's not, you know, college experience is different to the NFL experience, but it's still important. And the absence of total experience, I think, is an issue. And if you're going to be one of those guys where you're taking a guy that's very inexperienced, you have to have a pathway to being able to play them in the NFL while they're not the finished article. And I think that's where that running ability really shows up for guys like Jalen Hurts, Justin Fields, Josh Allen as well, presumably Anthony Richardson. And maybe where Trey Lance has had problems is that they haven't put him on the field yet. Like, he didn't really play right away, then got injured and hasn't been able to play. So he hasn't been able to get better during the course of a career, whereas Jalen Hurts had a couple of years to develop as a passer. Justin Fields has bought himself time to develop as a passer. And I agree with you. If Anthony Richardson is going to be your guy, you need to be confident building an offense year one that he can function in that lets him develop as a passer.
Right, exactly. And Anthony Richardson's a guy who didn't play at a big-time high school. So, you know, this is he's really still learning quarterback, the language and everything that goes along with it. And, you know, talking to teams that met with him at the combine, I think they were optimistic about how he learns and, he's a smart guy. But I think they were also a little bit worried about just all the things he doesn't know yet, because he hasn't been exposed to it because of just the 1 year as a starter, under 400 career pass attempts. I mean, you go through all the quarterbacks in the NFL, it's hard to find quarterbacks that had fewer than 400 pass attempts in college.
Yeah.
It makes it tough. Yeah, Trey Lance is, you know, one of the fewest, few guys that you could say that about. And obviously Trey Lance is, it's an incomplete at this point. We just haven't seen enough of him to really know what he is as an NFL player. So
at best.
It makes it tough to figure out a guy like Richardson, who's so, we've never really seen a guy that, you know, 6'4", 245, and can run a 4.3 or a low 4.4, has the arm that he does, but is so inexperienced in a lot of quarterback things. But I understand that if you're going to bet on a quarterback, why not bet on the guy that has all these tools to work with? And I think something else too, and I had an NFL exec point this out to me talking about quarterbacks a couple weeks ago about a month ago. We talk so much about, you know, Anthony Richardson being this, like, you know, high ceiling, because the tools, you know, he's got all this potential. The tools, when you look at quarterbacks, these great tools, they raise the floor, not necessarily the ceiling. You know, how they develop once they get to the NFL, that'll figure out the ceiling. But being able to have that size and that athleticism with that arm, that raises the floor for a guy like Anthony Richardson. So the tools that he brings, all these traits, that gives you a really good floor to work with. And then how he develops mentally and with all the quarterback specific things that you need to do in the NFL to be successful, that's what's going to figure out the ceiling. So, you know, I think we kind of get it backwards sometimes when we talk about how toolsy he is and how the upside's so high. And I think we need to talk about maybe the floor being pretty high for an Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
It's just about, okay, what does the ceiling look like? And that's all based on the mental development.
Especially the running ability. The running ability absolutely raises the floor when teams tap into it, right? I mean, that's the Jalen. Right. Like Jalen Hurts could have games where he only completed 10 passes, mm-hmm. and the Eagles could still move the ball because mm-hmm. of his running ability. I want to talk receivers because we did a receiver ranking show a couple weeks ago. They're always a tough position to rank because there's so many different receiver positions and wants and needs. Just looking at your rankings, you have Quentin Johnston at 5. Some people are higher on Quentin Johnston. You might be a little lower on him. Jalen Hyatt from Tennessee, you have at 3. He's kind of a polarizing guy. And then for Sam and I, we were both really low on Zay Flowers from BC relative to the rest of, I'd say, other evaluators. We had him more as a second-round type of prospect. You have him 4th as a first, second-round type of player. Where do you see those guys? What were some of the strengths, weaknesses you saw between Jalen Hyatt, Zay Flowers, Quentin Johnston, who you have as your 3, 4, 5?
Yeah, and I'm glad you set it up that way because, I mean, especially on Twitter, and we get so caught up in you know, what the wide receiver stack looks like and debating between first receiver and second receiver. And these guys are so different in what they offer and what position they're going to play in the NFL. Like, is it really even worth debating, you know, who's a better prospect between Quentin Johnston and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, you know, because they're so different in what they offer and what they bring. That it's more about what does your offense look like and, you know, what does your offense need? So, you know, and Jalen Hyatt, a great example. He's very specific in what he offers. You know, he's I think he's above average in 2 key areas, vertical speed and ball tracking. He's very, very good in those 2 areas. And so if your team needs that vertical burner, a guy that can win down the field, that can really stretch out a defense vertically, he's your guy. But if you want more of a route runner, you want more that's going to win, someone that's going to win underneath, you know, he's just not what you're looking for. So I think it really depends. Not enough is talked about with receivers and the different positions and what teams are looking for specifically. It's really weird because I want size at the position, yet of my top 7 receivers this year, over half of them, 4 of them are under 180 pounds, which is kind of a red flag. I mean, it's like, okay, what are we trending this way, or are we pushing these guys up, you know, more so than we have in past years because this isn't a great receiver class at the top? Let's take last year's receiver class, for example.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Where would the top receiver this year fall in last year's class? For me, I think he'd be outside the top 6. Last year was, you know, Garrett Wilson, Drake London, Jameson Williams, Olave, Dotson, and Treylon Burks. I think that for me, my top receivers, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I think he would have been my 7th of that group. And, you know, so even though the top receiver this year probably goes somewhere in that 15 to 25 range, I think it's important to understand just context-wise that, you know, being the first receiver drafted this year doesn't necessarily mean the same as being, compared to past wide receiver drafts. But, you know, Smith-Njigba, if you're looking for that slot guy, he's exactly what you want. Route runner, the spatial awareness is special. Ball skills are above average. Jordan Addison, wish he were bigger. That's the big hang-up with him.
Yeah.
173 pounds at the combine. And then his pro day was 170 pounds. So he actually lost some weight. You know, you worry about just, you know, that size and be able to work up the play strength going up against NFL-level DBs. But he has some suddenness to him. He does have the crisp footwork, so, you know, he can work in and out of breaks, get open, has some return experience as well, has yak ability. The production's outstanding. He's the only 3-year receiver in this draft to have over 3,000 career receiving yards. Jalen Hyatt, we talked about. Zay Flowers, I'm kind of with you. I'm not as nearly as high on Zay Flowers. as most people seem to be. Not a slam dunk first round prospect by any means. I graded him as more of a second rounder as well. He ended up, I think, at number 32 overall for me. So right on that cusp of maybe getting in the first round, maybe not. I think he showed more of a three level ability this year, being able to win deep, which he didn't always show in the past, which I think that was encouraging. But still, you're dealing with a smaller player. He's 5'9", bulked up. He was right around 175, but he bulked up, got over 180 for the draft process, which is always good to see. Quentin Johnston is always tough because the pro day didn't help either, because 6'3", 208. He was smart. He did exactly what he knew he was good at the combine. 40.5 in the vert, 11.2 in the broad. Great. That's exactly what, you see that explosiveness on film. But then at the pro day, runs 4.51 in the 40, which is not terrible, but not great. 7.31 in the three cone, below average. He's not necessarily a traditional ball winner, more drops than you want to see on his tape. So Quentin Johnston has so much ability. It's just, okay, what's his comp at the next level? What do we see him becoming? Do we ever see him being a true number one, or do you think he can develop into a number two? So I think there's a lot of different opinions on Quentin Johnston outside the league and inside the league. So, and then Josh Downs, North Carolina, he's a true slot. And then one of my favorite receivers this year, Tyler Scott from Cincinnati, big fan of his. He's another guy, 5'10", 177, so not big, but speed. And he was an option running back in high school. So this is not a guy, and you wouldn't guess it by watching his tape. He for a guy that's not been playing the position very long, he plays like a receiver who has been playing for a long time with the way he runs his routes. His ball skills are pretty impressive for his size, and a guy that didn't catch the ball very much in high school. One of my favorite stats from this class is he has 14 touchdowns the last 2 years. All of them went for 20 plus yards. And the average of all 14 touchdowns was 44.6 yards per catch. Wow. For touchdown catch. So this is a guy that can create both deep and then catch and run. So I see a lot of Tyler Lockett. We get one comp every year to Tyler Lockett. For me, this year, I think it's Tyler Scott. I think he has that type of ability.
Well, this is the year for Tyler Lockett comps because they're all built like Tyler Lockett.
I've seen it for Josh Downs before. Right. I've referenced that one. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It is wild. Like, all of the top receivers almost in this class are small there. And then what is strange to me is that you then get to a group later on where they're all big. Like, you get to this group of guys at the top that are all sort of built like Tyler Lockett. And then you get to the mid low rounds where there are all these sort of 6'3", 200 plus pound speedsters that aren't actually great football players, but have what it should look like,
right,
and aren't those kind of players. I want to get to cornerbacks for a minute, because at the top, I think it's becoming this interesting coin flip now for a lot of people between Christian Gonzalez from Oregon and Devin Witherspoon from Illinois. When I went through and watched them, I found it comfortably Devin Witherspoon is the number one guy. I get the reasons entirely why you would lean the other direction, because Gonzalez is the physical prototype. He's what you want, right? He's got the 6 foot size. He's got the almost 200 pounds. He's got the movement skills, the speed, and that's like all the question marks with Witherspoon are those things. It's the kind of, does he have that slick movement, the size, etc. So from the tape, when you watch Christian Gonzalez specifically, did you see enough concerns to make you back away from kind of what he is, or are you sort of projecting into the NFL, given the movement skills, given the ability, given his obvious talent, like he'll get there? Like, it's more of a what he can be at the next level as opposed to what he is right now.
Yeah, and I'm going to bet on the traits. And I think Christian Gonzalez, and this is something going back to the summer, I mentioned how that's my process is really in the summer, lay the groundwork. And I had someone tell me, hey, make sure you watch Christian Gonzalez. And so I did. And I was blown away. The analogy I use is, at the end of Avengers Endgame, when everyone's coming back and Captain America, he says assemble, and I was like, as like, why is this comic book movie giving me goosebumps? Like, I don't, what is happening? And I'm watching this Colorado corner, and he's just blowing me away with the way he's moving out there and this coverability. I'm like, why is this Colorado corner giving me goosebumps? But that's how it felt last summer watching Christian Gonzalez. And then he transfers to Oregon, and I thought he played even better. And I thought the concerns I had with Gonzalez coming into the year, he made me feel better about this year. I thought the ball skills were better. Ability to turn, locate, make a play. He got better throughout the year as the year went on. This is still a really young player. He doesn't turn 21 until June, late June. So, you know, young player, he's, you know, 6'1" and a half, 200 pounds. You know, the speed metrics are awesome. I think the play strength is good enough. It's not something that I'm worried about. So I think there's a lot of, now the one thing that does worry me a little bit is he reminds me a lot of Jeff Okuda coming out. And obviously, you know, Jeff Okuda hasn't exactly worked out. Now, you know, it's injuries and stuff there. It's not exactly a apples to apples comparison, but you know, that maybe gave me a little bit of a pause there. But I'm with you on Devin Witherspoon. I mean, he's right there, and he's a guy that I liked coming into the year. And then the more you watched him this year, you just fall in love with him, with the way he plays, the play personality, the tenacity that he plays with. He is such an aggressive player, and sometimes it works against him. I think over the last 2 years, he's over double digit penalties, and you know, you live and die with that. But I think that there's way more, you know, to be excited about with Devin Witherspoon. Do you wish you were a little bit bigger? Yeah, no question. You know, hopefully he can stay around that 185 range. That's what he came in at his pro day, ran a 4.43, which is outstanding for him, better than I think a lot of people thought he would run. So, you know, there's a lot of thing about Witherspoon that translates to the pro game. And as long as you feel good about that 185, yeah, I think you have no problem taking Witherspoon in the top 10. To me, these are two top 10 players in this draft. So I think you feel good with either one.
All right, Dane, I want to get you out of here with a couple predictions and then telling everybody where they can find the beast. So anything as far as draft night, bold takes, predictions, how do you see the first round shaking out? Every year there are some surprises. Is there anything either that you're hearing or that you're just feeling that might be a surprise as far as draft night goes?
Okay, so a surprise on draft night.
Sorry, this is a bad question. I hate when people put me on the spot like this, like, hey, tell me something crazy.
I'm trying to think of something good, though, you know, like something juicy to really be bold about. I mean, I do think Bryce goes one. I don't think Tyree Wilson goes ahead of Will Anderson. I know that's a juicy one that a lot of people like to throw out there. I don't think that happens. How about Hendon Hooker goes on round two? It seems like everyone puts him in round one. Like that's going to happen. Some people put him in the top 10. I'm going to say he doesn't go until round two. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does go round one, just, you know, especially if a team really does value that fifth year option. But let's say Hendon Hooker doesn't go until round two. That's my bold prediction for round one.
It's where he belongs.
It is. It is where he should be. Yeah, that's where he should be. Okay, really quick, though. You mentioned Tyree Wilson. Last year, you were one of the first names to mention Trayvon Walker, right? And I think you mentioned, hey, watch out for Trayvon Walker in the first. He could be, you know, top 20. And before you know it, it's like, right, he could be top 10. And then at some point, it's like, guys, Trayvon Walker might go number one, by the way. And I didn't believe it until the name was actually called. We haven't seen somebody with that lack of production but incredible tools go that high. I think there's some similarities to Tyree Wilson. How do you compare those two prospects? Mm-hmm. And do you think there are some similarities? Do you disagree? You have Tyree Wilson as your number two edge just behind Will Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I think you could explain it a little bit more with Trayvon, you know, being part of such a loaded depth chart, being in that system, what he was asked to do specifically, you know, making the most of the snaps that he was getting, where Tyree Wilson, you know, it's okay, why did it take until, you know, year five for us to really see this guy that could, you know, disrupt the pocket like he was able to do? And I mean, he was productive last year as a junior, but we didn't really see it, I think, full go until this year. So I think it was easier to explain maybe the lack of production over his career. And I think also Trayvon Walker being in the SEC, Tyree Wilson being in the Big 12. You would expect more. Tyree had like 7 sacks this year. His pressure numbers were awesome, though. But I think that for a guy that just how you draw him up, how you want him to look, they both. I mean, I can understand why you'd make that comparison. They're both really super long. They're both athletic. We don't have testing numbers on Tyree, unfortunately, because of that foot. But I think he would have been tested fantastic. I do think with Tyree being a little bit older, he's going to be a 23-year-old rookie. That may be a difference with between him and Trayvon, but I think traits-wise, I could see some parallels.
All right, Dane, we appreciate it. Tell everybody where they could get The Beast, your pride and joy here.
You just need a subscription to The Athletic. And if you have your subscription, you get it free. So I think it's a pretty good value. And you know what? If you don't want to check it out, The Athletic for a month, sign up for a month. And you get all of our draft coverage as well. Download the PDF. A lot of people print it out. It's over 400 reports. No other draft guide has pro day data and all the testing, NFL verified testing data for almost 1,900 prospects like this one does. So I think NFL draft nuts will really find it useful.
I'm printing it out here on the office printer, by the way. That's the trick. Do it at the office.
300,000 yeah. words, and people are printing this thing out.
Yeah, I just press Control P.
8-point font. Yeah, I try not to make it wordy. I want to paint a picture. That's the goal of every report. You know, paint a picture of, if you don't know anything about this guy, after your reader's report, you should have a better idea of, okay, this is what this guy's going to bring to our team. Background, the analysis, the testing, the stats, all that stuff.
How much of this is done as of like a month ago? Or are you cramming the last month trying to get the last stuff done? Is this a stretch?
Yeah, most of the hay's in the barn, but it's a matter of cross-checking and making sure, okay, any late injury stuff. And then really it's a lot of – and the big guys are done. You know, that they were done in January. But as we know, a lot of guys get drafted just based off how they work out at the pro day.
Right.
So combing through all those numbers, thousands and thousands of players – and say, oh, this Kent State linebacker ran a 4.44 at his pro day. Okay, I need to look more into him. Or the last before we were ready to go to print and send the guide out. And then Montana State, they always have their pro day last every year. And like literally the day before we were done, Montana State, their safety, Ty Okada, had this amazing pro day. And now is a decent chance to get drafted. And it's like, okay, I need to go back and watch more tape on Okada and make sure he's in the guide. And sure enough, yeah, he made it because the tape is good enough and the pro day was awesome. So it's more about the pro day data, figuring out, okay, who are those late risers going to be? And then, you know, just getting info from my contacts in the league to figure out, okay, who maybe do I need to go back and look more on, see more of, that type of thing.
Awesome. Well, it's great stuff. I love having it. It's you get everything you need all those prospects. So great work, Dane. We appreciate it. Appreciate all your time here. Everybody go check out The Athletic, subscribe, and just tell them Dane sent you, right? That's why you're there. Go get the Beast. So thank you, Dane. Enjoy the rest of draft season, and always a good time here.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys. Anytime.
All right, we're letting Dane go, and we're going to wrap it up here on the PFF NFL podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Still live. That was fun, man. I mean, we got about 45 minutes there, and there's like a million other things that we could discuss.
Yeah, barely scratched the surface. I mean, this guide he has is insane. Like 300,000 words, 308 pages, however many guys he said he ranked there. And the information in it is insane. Like, you don't find that information anywhere else in terms of like background nuggets, you know, like the hospital that Bryce Young was born in.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Not sure why you need that, but it's there.
It is all there. I mean, so this is probably the closest thing to emulating, though, what is in an NFL scouting department as far as the information, right? A general manager can log in, and it's interesting how their scouting systems are set up, right? Scouts in an organization can only see a certain level of information, right? They don't get everybody's grades, right? Because you don't want to get influenced or whatever, but a GM gets to see every scout's grades, every coach's grades, all of the background information, whatever. So a GM can log into their scouting system and get all of this stuff, right? You have all of this information on the players, plus your grades and all that stuff. And this emulates an NFL scouting system in that respect, right? Because it's not just, hey, I think this guy's good. I think this guy's a second rounder. It really is the art and art more than science of it, because there's a lot of information, and it's like, how do you want to weigh all of this information? That's what teams are always dealing with.
Yeah, no, it is a ton of that information that doesn't tend to exist in a lot of other kind of media type of draft guides. So there's definitely something unique here. It was interesting when we were talking to him. He's another guy who seems to skew towards that traits sort of type of player, right? The betting on what Gonzalez can become rather than what he is right now, which is not necessarily, I'm not criticizing that as a concept. I think sometimes that gets the NFL into trouble, see Trayvon Walker. But there's also obviously, that's the purpose, right? Is to figure out what a player is going to be, not what he was for the last 4 years. Like we know that, we have information on that. We can articulate what a player was. The critical element is trying to figure out what he will be if we select him in the draft in the first round and he gets to our team and in our system and all those kinds of things. So it is the name of the game, but I think sometimes that approach of let's bet on the traits and let's get the coaches to figure out the rest saddles you with some players that aren't actually that great.
But I do like how Dane said that, right? What he mentioned about quarterback specifically, but he said you're betting on something, right? Everything you're doing is betting on something, because everybody has their strengths and weaknesses, right? And I think that comes back to the phrase I keep using with risk appetite and all that stuff, right? Here's what's interesting to me. Everybody needs a framework to start from, and some people start with this framework of traits, right? Give me all the guys that can do NFL level things. Mm. And even if they don't do it often enough, that's the pool that I want to draft from. I might take the approach that I'm going to model, you know, production data points and measurable data points, and that might be my framework, right? The Bears, did you see the Bears video?
The analytics cylinder?
The analytics cylinder that was out there. By the way, I mean, look, I'm... The analytics cylinder that was on there, that slide was made for the video. It was not made for Ryan Poles. That slide was made so that people have this idea of what they're doing.
I mean,
that's what it was for.
The slide, the fact that the slide was created, I think, is the problem, more where it was designed for.
So for people that didn't show, it was behind the scenes with the Bears, their draft process, going into this, when they traded down from number one, they got into their analytics department and some of the information that they had. Here's what stood out to me there, though. You have Ryan Poles goes, you know, to their team. He's like, give me something. Give me some information, right? And then it was almost like, this guy has a good get-off. This guy does this well, that well, whatever. I feel like that's how the organizations generally work. There was a behind-the-scenes video for the Colts a couple years ago where, you know, we know the guys in the Colts, John Park, who's there, and Chris Ballard, you know, they're going through, and every scout's giving their take on a player, and then it's like, hey, John, give me a nugget. And he goes to John, oh, this guy does blah, 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 blah. I do feel like the analytics component or the numbers component is often seen as like the cherry on top, right? As long as that backs things up, we feel good about it, but the scouting is the foundation. What I'm curious about, Sam, what if you ran the organization starting with the data? What if you started with our baseline is not my scouting grades. It's actually this analytical pool of players, which is essentially what I'm doing. Analytical pool of players, say start there, and then you still do your scouting and all that stuff, but you start with, hey, analytical GM, these are my players. Hey, scouts, give me something on this guy. Do you like him or not? You know, I wonder if you just reverse things a little bit, if your hit rates would be a little bit better.
I mean, to me, what I think you want to do is effectively build two separate boards, and then the last thing in the process or somewhere in the middle, you effectively mash them together. So number one is the traditional scouting method of area scouts, you know, background, the same way it's always been done. You get those guys, they grade, they go through the tape, they do their thing, and then you compile a very conventional, traditional style, tape-based draft board. And then you do kind of what you're doing with your model, much as I hate to give it credit. Like, you essentially look through all the data we have and figure out what are the things that predict performance most effectively, what are the thresholds we need to meet in terms of athleticism, in terms of production, in terms of all these things, right? What are the most important elements of all those kind of things? Figure out what that looks like, create the model, come up with the models, big board, right? Adjusting for position value and all that kind of thing. And then you essentially have these two different top 150s or whatever. Now you start looking at, okay, who's a massive outlier over here that this thing thinks stinks? Who's a massive outlier over here that these guys think stink? And let's start cross-checking and let's start figuring out who do we take off these lists because they don't meet one or two of these, one or other of these things. And then conversely, like who is universally loved by both sides? Who do the tape guys and the data say are going to be great? Those have to have like a special degree of confidence that they're going to end up being amazing. That is presumably how you're going to end up with the strongest board possible.
Yeah. And look, I think there's elements of that across the league. I think there's a lot of cross comparing and the data people, the analytics people or whoever, data scientists, they do kind of go in their own place and come up with their stuff for free agency and for the draft and all that stuff. But again, I think when it gets implemented, scouting is the bigger piece of the pie. And then the analytics stuff just kind of tweaks a little bit. And I am fascinated by doing it the other way. And even when I am modeling, I'm using Dane's information. We are doing some work on the actual scouting reports that he's putting together and trying to quantify those a little bit and kind of find similarities in Dane's writing through the years. And that's actually the benefit of the rich writing. There's a lot of that stuff happening around sports right now where you tell your scouts, write your scouting reports. I care less about your hit rate. I care more about your analysis, what a guy does well, what he doesn't do well. And you run that through your text analytics and all that stuff and come up with some insights and see not so much when you as a human rank somebody, but when you write something, how much weight does that hold historically? Does that matter? Does it not matter? Those things are interesting to me. So you can use the scouts as part of modeling and quantifying things. And again, I think a lot of smart teams are doing that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What else you got, man?
That's about it. I think we're out today. We're done.
You just want to wrap it up?
Yeah.
Well, go check out The Beast over at The Athletic. Dane does a great job. We appreciate having him join the show. What do we have for tomorrow's show, Sam? Something very special.
Yeah, tomorrow you've heard a lot recently about these S2 tests, cognitive tests that people are using, and the scores are being leaked out, and it's become the new Wonderlic, essentially. You know, the kind of mental test that's taken behind the scenes that all of a sudden the numbers start leaking out, and when everybody makes something of that pre-draft. So we decided to have on the founder, co-founder of S2 Cognition, I think is the company's name, a guy called Brandon Ally. So he's going to be coming on tomorrow. I talked to him yesterday. We had the whole interview set. You're going to take a look at it, and then we'll have a little reaction on the show as well. But that'll be tomorrow's show, is talking through this test, what it's capable of doing, what its applications are, the kind of players that have shown really well in the past, you know, whether we would do well at it, that kind of thing.
Somebody in the chat has just asked. He said Sam and Steve should take the test. I have my money on Steve scoring higher.
Wow, that's pretty cold.
I am interested in hearing what he has to say.
Knowing what it measures, I do know from my own playing career that is not an area I thrive in.
Well, I'm trying to figure this out. Like, if I don't know. I don't know if it's different across sports. Like, if you asked me, I played two sports, basketball and baseball, right? And for basketball, I did not have good natural feel for the game. I'm just not a natural basketball player. But in baseball, as a pitcher, you don't have a lot of these opportunities. But I was I just understood the game. I had a pretty good instinctual feel for the game the few times that it came up as a pitcher. Like, I would do stuff on the field that I didn't know that I could do.
Yeah.
As far as like a slide pickup and throw, like just instinctive plays, athletic plays that I didn't know. So I wonder if it's different by sport or if it's just this athletic awareness where it's like, if you're good at this, you'd be a good point guard and you'd be a good quarterback and you'd be a good center if you could, in hockey, if you could skate, you know?
Maybe one of the things that is kind of getting lost in this world of, oh, Will Levis had a 93 or whatever that's getting thrown out there right now is, it's not one test. Like, it's sort of seven components that measure different things that are getting, much like PFF grade, that then get like mashed together and, oh, you're a 93, right? So the numbers that are getting thrown, right, they're a very like blunt tool in terms of what this thing is actually doing, which is much more granular in articulating like how a guy's processing works, not just does it work good or bad.
Right. Yeah, so it's going to be a great show. So tune in tomorrow, little S2 cognition test. Mm-hmm. Again, thanks to Dane. Go check out The Beast over at The Athletic. That's it for us today. We'll see you tomorrow.